Now, I have a question for you, my child. I mean, are you ready?
Yeah.
Are you? Yeah, okay. It's best if you respond with the words.
I did respond with words.
First, you gave me this look. You were like...
I was waiting for you to ask the question afterwards.
Oh, I see. I was actually asking if you were ready.
Yeah, I thought you were going to ask... I thought you were asking if I was ready for the question.
Oh, yeah, I was. Are you ready for the question? Maybe that is the question. Are you ready?
What's the question?
You did it again. You gave me that look. That like... But you are ready. You're ready for my big question.
Yes, what is the question?
The question is, what's today's movie?
Zombie.
Kind of. Do you remember the conversation we had last time about the title of this film?
Yeah.
This movie has a number of titles, and it has a really weird place in horror and Italian horror and franchise history.
Mm-hmm.
So the movie is called Zombie, Z-O-M-B-I-E, but it's also known as Zombie 2, but it's also known as Zombie Flesh Eaters, but it's also known as Nightmare Island. And these are all valid names for it because of where this movie sits in film history. Are you familiar with Dawn of the Dead?
Yeah, we watched it together years ago.
Dawn of the Dead. Years. That must have been years ago.
It was in the duplex.
Wow. That was, you were probably too young to watch Dawn of the Dead.
I was too young to watch a lot of stuff.
1978's Dawn of the Dead, George Romero, he made it about a decade after he made Night of the Living Dead. Dawn of the Dead is considered by many to be his greatest film. Now, he had a partner in coming up with the script and the story for Dawn of the Dead, and that partner you may have heard of. His name was Dario Argento. Dario Argento loved Night of the Living Dead. He was one of the big proponents of it in Europe. He got it kind of like seen. And so when he heard that Romero was making Dawn of the Dead, the sequel to Night of the Living Dead, he was like, can I help? Can I help? And Romero was like, heck yes. And Argento's all, you want to come to Rome? And he's like, yeah, I want to come to Rome. So they sat in Rome and they like worked out Dawn of the Dead together. And they came with this deal. Romero was like, I'll edit it for America. And then you can re-edit the whole film for Europe because you know what Europeans like. So you take all the footage, you make your own movie out of this, and I will release it in America, you release it in Europe. New score and everything. So Romero releases Dawn of the Dead in America. It's a huge hit. Argento releases Dawn of the Dead in Europe, what's known as the international cut, as Zombie, which is a weird name for it because there's more than one zombie in Dawn of the Dead. But I guess it's kind of like there he was sort of putting a stamp on like, this is the ultimate zombie movie. This movie will define what a zombie is. Zombie. And it had a score by Goblin. Yes, very good.
Goblin zombies.
Goblin only scored the European version of Dawn of the Dead. Their score is not in the American version. Over the years, there have been like 7 different cuts of Dawn of the Dead.
Question.
Like, I think yes.
Can we watch Dawn of the Dead European version?
I would love to, if we can get our hands on it. There's so many different versions of it now. I think the European version, if I'm not mistaken, has less gore, but more character stuff, less characters have more gore. There's something about the gore difference. I can't remember what it is. It also has that zombie score. I mean, goblin score. So... that was 1978, Dawn of the Dead. We all love it. We all watched it. It was a huge hit in America and in Europe, and it changed everything. Now, it's 1979, and this Italian film producer, Fabrizio DeAngelis...
Hang on. So, Dawn of the Dead in Europe was called Zombie. And then this movie came out.
Okay. This producer, named Fabrizio DeAngelis, is going to take advantage of a loophole in Italian film rules. And that loophole is, you can make a sequel to anything and call it a sequel and name it that sequel and release it as a sequel to any movie and nobody can do anything about it. So
that's a pretty big loophole.
Let's make a sequel to Zombie. So he scrapes together a script and he starts assembling a team, and he gets directors keep turning it down. Finally, he gets this celebrated, famous film director named Lucio Fulci, who had done westerns and thrillers and very most importantly giallo films, a ton of great giallo films. Fulci would go on to be known ultimately as the godfather of gore.
Cool.
But at this point he was still like doing a lot of different things. He had no idea this movie was supposed to be a sequel to Dawn of the Dead. No idea. Didn't even know what it was called. I think when he signed on, it was still just called Nightmare Island. And he was like, all right. And then they were like, oh, by the way, this is a sequel to Zombie. And he was like, the hell you say? And he was unhappy about it. But he made the movie anyway. However, here's where the title thing gets weird. The movie gets released in Europe, Zombie 2. Then it gets released in America as Zombie. Because there is no zombie in America. So they're like, well, this is Zombie. So now there's this movie that's called Zombie 2 in Europe and Zombie in America. Sometimes it's called Zombie Flesh Eaters, but it's mostly just called Zombie. Now, where things get really weird is that later on, there was a Zombie 3. Zombie 3 comes out. It's not a sequel to Zombie 2, but it is made by Fulci again. And it gets released in America as Zombie 3.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no Zombie 2 in America. There's Zombie and there's Zombie 3. And then there's Dawn of the Dead, which is unconnected in America, but is Zombie in Europe. Now, I know this is confusing. And I know that this is a weird thing to talk about. But where it gets weirder is the fact that the Zombie film series is an entire thing in not only Italy, but the world. And if you just look up the zombie film series, in Italy, it's Zombie, Zombie 2, and Zombie 3. In the UK, it's Zombie Flesh Eaters 2, which is Zombie 3, and Zombie Flesh Eaters 3, which is a totally different film called After Death. In Germany, it's Dawn of the Dead as Zombie, Day of the Dead as Zombie 2, and Zombie 3 as Zombie 3. In Thailand, Zombie 2 is Zombie Flesh Eaters. Zombie 3 is Zombie Flesh Eaters 2. After Death is Zombie Flesh Eaters 3. And a totally unrelated movie called Killing Birds is Zombie Flesh Eaters 4. Now, where it gets really weird is that in Australia, there's a totally different numbering system. But starting with Zombie 4, it's a movie called Bacterion. Zombie 5 is a movie called Vengeance of the Zombies, which actually was made a decade before Bacterion. Zombie 6 is called The Mirage, but it's actually called Dawn of the Mummy, which was made in 81. Zombie 7 is called Last Rites, but it's actually the movie Night of the Seagulls. And Zombie 8 was actually made to be Zombie 8, but it was made to be Zombie 8 45 years later. It's Zombie 8 Urban Decay. Now, in America, we have Zombie, Zombie 3. We have Zombie 4, which is After Death. And Zombie 5, which is that movie Killing Birds. However, in the 90s, they redid it. So Zombie and Zombie 2, which is Zombie 3. Zombie 3 is now a movie called The Hanging Woman. Zombie 4, A Virgin Among the Living Dead. Zombie 5 is Revenge of the House of Usher. Zombie 6 is Monster Hunter, which is actually a sequel to the movie Anthropophagus, which is a whole other series. And Zombie 7 is The Grim Reaper. Now, what's funny is some of these movies actually cross over with the La Casa series, The House, which La Casa is a whole other made-up film series that includes the Evil Dead movies and then a bunch of unrelated movies called La Casa. But some versions of La Casa actually include the House series from America, which is House, House 2, The Horror Show, and House 4. However, Horror Show is also called House 3, but only in Europe, not in America. And so the La Casa series includes some of these movies as well. What I'm saying is there's dozens upon dozens of movies that are part of these different franchises that have nothing to do with each other. You can watch them without knowing the other movies exist because they don't have the same characters, they don't have the same plots, they don't have the same continuity. Most of them are out of order in the decade they were made. And Zombie is kind of the movie that started this whole trend, kicked it off. How does that make you feel?
I still like the dead eyes of Dr. Dracula.
Still your favorite fake title?
Yeah.
Still your favorite fake title. I just love, someone should do a podcast that is just trying to figure out the zombie series.
They should do what you did with the Berenstain Bears series. And they try and tie in every single
Oh.
Like all of those, but then all of the La Casa stuff and like the other stuff as well. They should be like, and this is how this is connected in my headcanon.
Like try to make it work continuity wise. Yeah. Like try to like smooth that out. That's an interesting idea. That's like trying to make the actual Resident Evil movies work continuity wise.
Yep.
They don't make any sense.
No.
Remember how the world came to an end in one of them and then the next movie everything was fine again? The oceans dried up in like the fifth movie. And then in like the sixth one, they're like, there's just water everywhere in forests. Don't understand it. But are you ready? We'll talk about Fulci later on. Because I believe we may have another Fulci movie anyway. But are you ready to watch this movie? Are you ready to watch some zombies?
Yeah.
Some zomboys?
Yeah.
I don't even know why Guillermo del Toro likes this movie. I'm going to have to look that up as well.
Yeah, because the Dawn of the Dead is not here, is it?
Nope. Isn't that weird?
Yeah. I mean, you'd think with the Dario Argento we've watched, you'd put Zombie on here.
Nope.
Instead, I mean, we got yes. Zombie.
Would you rather watch Zombie or Zombie? I mean, come on, let's be real.
Does it have the same characters?
Does what have the same characters?
Does Zombie 2, since it's supposed to be a sequel to Zombie? Zombie, okay, I'm just going to refer to it as the European titles because it makes more sense.
Yes, I get what you're saying.
Have the same characters as Zombie?
Absolutely not.
So is it actually a sequel or is it just saying it's a sequel?
I mean, what's really a
no,
sequel?
No, I mean, man? Like, is it a continuation or is it just not?
It is in no way a continuation.
Okay, so we don't have to watch Zombie to know what's going on in this one.
No, that is why this movie is just called Zombie.
Okay.
That is why in America, they released it and they did not try to tie it into Dawn of the Dead at all. Which is funny because, like, there's Night of the Living Dead and then its sequels, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, Land of the Dead, et cetera, et cetera. But there's also Night of the Living Dead and then its other sequels, Return of the Living Dead, Return of the Living Dead Part 2, Return of the Living Dead Part 3, et cetera. So it also has two separate continuities. So who knows?
And I mean, technically, since this is a sequel to Zombie, it is also a sequel to Dawn of the Dead, which means it has three
continuities. Yes. Yeah. The Night of the Living Dead series, because Night of the Living Dead, they forgot to copyright it. Night of the Living Dead has always been in the public domain. So legally,
forgot to copyright it.
Legally, that's the truth. Legally, anyone could always have made sequels to Night of the Living Dead. That's just the way it is. So Romero went ahead and made the Of the Dead series. And I think Joe Russo went ahead and made the Living Dead series. So that's the way it works.
So wait, there's Night of the Living Dead. It mm-hmm. splits into two continuities.
Two continuities.
And then there's Dawn of the Dead, which splits into two continuities.
Yes, more or less. Yes.
Because Dawn of the Dead, while it is a sequel to the Night of the Living Dead, it also had a bunch of sequels.
Right.
So
there's also the remake of Dawn of the Dead, which branched off into a couple of different continuities as well. So
someone should map this out.
I am sure there is a horror website somewhere with some kind of flowchart. It is complicated. The only thing they have in common is that most of the movies have zombies in them. All right. Speaking of confusing continuities, I'm Phil.
And I'm Willow.
And it's Del Toro time.
I have a complaint to make.
Do you have a complaint to make?
I mean, I always have a complaint to make.
I was going to say, like, what else is new?
Food at the zoo is so ridiculously expensive.
Is it?
$50.
$50 for what?
Burger meal and a kid's chicken meal.
You had a burger meal?
Yeah.
That's a lot.
And some cheese curds.
Zoos, I don't think of zoos as a place to, like, get, like, cuisine.
I was thinking, like, you know, fast food pricing. Nope.
Oh,
nope.
God, no. No, that's how they make their big money. They give their big money with all that food money.
I don't know if Mitzi told you this.
Probably not.
But I did get her first Dippin' Dots.
Aw, she got her first Dippin' Dots.
Yeah.
She's kind of demanding when it comes to going out and, like, having things bought for her.
She wasn't for me.
Okay.
She was good. Like, she kept being like, are you sure? Because that's how I am when people try and buy things for me. I'm like, but you don't have to. And they're like.
Well, you know, it's a good thing you did not do at the zoo. What? You're looking
run into zombies?
I was just going to say run into any zombies. Yes, we are back. We are still discussing. We are now discussing Zombie, Zombie 2, Nightmare Island, Zombie 2, Nightmare Island, whatever you want to call this movie. Zombies Ate My Neighbors. I don't remember. There's like a zombie creeping flesh or something for the American version. There's
zombie. Like a million. Zombie flesh eaters.
Zombie flesh eaters. There's so many different titles. This thing, The Dead Walk Among Us, is another one. You know, called Voodoo is another one.
You know, this movie, like days after watching it, I realized just how upsetting it was.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
What made this movie so upsetting?
Well, I mean, like for a lot of movies, I can just watch the movie. And this one, there were like multiple scenes where I had to like not look at the screen for
you
an
really
extended
did
period
look away.
Of time.
Our audience may not understand that you are not happy when any kind of worm is shown on screen.
No.
Yeah. That happened in Suspiria.
It's not just on screen though, because remember when Mitzi brought in like had like a couple of earthworms she was keeping as pets,
yeah,
and she tried to show them to me, and I actually just started crying.
You do not like any kind of wormy thing. You didn't like the maggots in Suspiria. I mean, I don't think you're supposed to like the maggots in Suspiria, but you didn't like the maggots in Suspiria, and you certainly did not like all the worm action in this movie. There's a lot of worm action.
An unreasonable amount of worm action.
Do you know why there are so many worms in this movie?
Because like,
from a practical standpoint.
No.
Because worms are cheap. Probably just because worms are cheap.
Well, why did they need anything?
Easy to get drink. Because it's a gross out. It's a gross out movie. That's right. We were discussing Lucio Fulci's Zombie.
Zombie.
We talked a lot about the different names for this movie. And we talked a little bit about like kind of the world leading up to it. But So Lucio Fulci, he had worked as a screenwriter. He worked in a lot of larger movies with a lot of Italian filmmakers like Rossellini. He had made a ton of movies by the time this one came out. Like Fulci was in like the middle of his career, and he was known for not for horror movies at all. He had made a lot of comedies, some westerns, and then he did some very famous giallo films, but also children's movies. He made White Fang, a very famous adaptation of White Fang, and then a follow-up to it, a sequel to White Fang, like the Challenge to White Fang was his next movie. And he was just making kind of like these like comedies and just actioners. And this was his first just full-on horror movie. And he really threw himself into it and then kind of never looked back except for some sci-fis later on. But horror became his, not just horror, but like total gross-out horror.
This was an upsetting movie.
It's an upsetting film. And it redefined, in a way, it kind of redefined the zombie genre.
We've said that about every zombie movie we've watched on this show.
And I think part of that is because we forget how young the zombie genre is. Like, once you get away from, like the classic zombies of like, Haiti and, the voodoo zombies, even though part of this movie's innovation is that it brings all of that back into the fold.
Kind of. I still disagree with that statement.
But that's not a mistake. Like the whole concept of is this or is this not a voodoo zombie movie is intentional on the part of the screenwriter. It's supposed to be ambiguous. You're never supposed to, because we were trying to figure out like, is this guy like creating the zombies or is he trying to stop the zombies? Turns out you're never supposed to know the answer to that. It is supposed to be a mess and you're just supposed to be like, whatever. And
I think part of it now is that we try and find like we do our best to understand each of the movies we watched when some of the movies are just like not supposed to be understood. They're just supposed to be like, just sit down and watch the movie.
Right. And I think that we tend to put that on Fulci's lap, but this movie was not, of course, completely written by him. It was written by Elisa Briganti. And of course, the movie was handed to him as a piece that he was not enthusiastic about making. Of course, like we said, he didn't want to make a sequel to Dawn of the Dead. But this wasn't just his project, right? You know, like he was doing someone else's screenplay. He would take a bigger control of the storyline from here on out. But yeah, this was Elisa Briganti's screenplay and her second produced screenplay. So remember, this was a movie written by a woman. Because we are all equal.
Yep.
In under the eye of a trusting Lord. So how does this Zombie movie begin?
On a boat.
On a boat. And you called out this immediately the similarities between the opening of this movie and a major plot point in a classic vampire novel called The Dracula.
I did.
Didn't you? Or maybe I was just imagining it. Maybe I thought you should. Maybe I thought you should have because you just recently read Dracula. The fact that this movie begins with a derelict boat arriving in a harbor.
I mean, the movie technically begins with a guy shooting at us. So.
It does begin with a guy shooting his gun at the screen and the audience fleeing for their own safety because they've never seen a movie before. Now, the movie begins with something rising up out of a death shroud and a person pointing a gun at the screen and firing. That's something that comes into play much later. But no, the plot kicks off with a derelict boat arriving in New York Harbor.
I definitely didn't say anything about Dracula.
Okay. I think then in my mind, I was like, I bet Willow's going to say something about Dracula because she just read and did a report on Dracula.
The only thing I remember about Dracula is that I was very sad about
the cowboy dying?
No, I didn't care about that. About Lucy.
Lucy, yes. But there is a major plot point in Dracula is when the boat arrives and everyone on board is dead, except for, of course, Dracula is on the boat. That's how Dracula gets to...
And then he turns into a giant wolf and friggin' hops off the boat.
So this movie begins with a boat arriving in New York Harbor and everyone on board is dead and we get a couple of comedy cops and the world's first obese zombie shows up, and also a bunch of worms. And it might come as a surprise, considering there are helicopter shots in this, like, great overhead helicopter shots of New York Harbor and of the boat, and that we see some cops pulling up on their boat, that none of the shots in New York in this movie were done with permits. They were all stolen shots that the crew would run in, set up their cameras, film as much as they could, and then run away. They didn't pay for any of these location shots. The only thing they paid for this was Fulci hired a helicopter tour. And his cinematographer went on. It's like, oh, just don't worry about it. I got this camera. Don't worry about it. And they were like, can you just circle around New York Harbor? Really want to see New York Harbor. And so they just like filmed the boat out of the window. And like that was how they got all the overhead shots.
That's fair. I wouldn't want to pay for anything either.
Brilliant. The anarchy involved in the making of this movie.
I mean, like, really, who are they hurting with that? No,
they're not hurting anyone. They're just not playing by the rules, which is fine. A lot of the beginning of this movie takes place in New York City, legitimately in New York. Like, they would just set up the camera on the sidewalk, film as fast as they could, and then run off. That's how you got, like, the exterior shot of the police station. Like, it's amazing.
They were actually, like, hiding from the police during this
art imitates life.
Like the police officer was actually a cop when he, like, tried to find those two actors.
I was going to say that the police officers in the beginning of this movie may actually have been cops. There's not really record on who they are, but the legend is that they're two actual off-duty police officers. That's how they got the costuming and everything so accurate. Mm-hmm. But Troy Howarth, who does one of the, who's a Italian film historian who I've dropped his name a million times in the show, believes that one of them might be a cop, but the other one I think shows up as a zombie later on, and they're like, they didn't fly a New York cop to Italy to film him as a bit part as a zombie. Like, it's most likely he's an Italian actor, but this giant zombie attacks him on the boat, and the zombie falls into the water, and come to find out this boat belongs to a man whose daughter is one of the main characters.
Yeah, well, that would make sense. The movie has to start somehow.
Right. So how does she come into play?
The cops are like, where's your dad? And she's like, I don't know. Where is he? And they're like, well, where is he?
Yeah.
The most realistic conversation. They're so angry at her.
They are
it's
so
ridiculous.
Angry at her for her dad not being on a boat. Who is this character? Her name is Anne Bowles. What do you think of the character of Anne Bowles?
I mean, I can't fault her for anything that happens.
Nope.
I can't, like, I feel like if I didn't think too much about it, I'd be like, oh, she's really annoying. She screams a lot. There's a lot of, but I'm like, yeah, that's kind of what I would do in this situation. Actually, we did discuss what I would do in this scenario if I was a doctor and there was a zombie disease going on.
What would you do?
Gun.
You just gun everything down.
Yeah.
which is fair. Our heroine is very much like the female Barbara from the original Night of the Living Dead in that she doesn't do much, but she's there the whole time. She is very very pretty woman, and as I love to find connections between movies that we watch, this is our connection with Rosemary's Baby. How is this our connection with Rosemary's Baby? Well, the star of Rosemary's Baby was Mia Farrow, the frail, wan, willowy Mia Farrow. And Anne is played by Tisa Farrow, the sister of Mia Farrow, who had a short-lived acting career, but an acting career. But then she gave it up. And not only did she give it up, she disappeared. Went completely into hiding. And people were like, whatever happened to Tisa Farrow? I don't know. Rumor was that she became a cab driver in New York City. People don't know if that's true. It was only in recent years that she started actually giving interviews again and putting in public appearances. But there's just this gap of history we don't have in Tisa Farrow. She
got on the wrong side of the Italian mafia.
Why not? You know. She was in a few movies. Her other big movie was she was in Woody Allen's Manhattan. And then after this, she appeared in Anthropophagus, which is one of the most gory horror films. And then after that, she was like,
see you later.
See ya. I'm done. I'm done with all this.
Wasn't there another connection we had to another movie we've watched?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They're coming up. There's more coming up besides the fact that it's an Italian horror movie.
Yeah.
So she gets like yelled at by the cops for her father not being on a boat. And it attracts the attention of our hero, I guess.
He's not our hero. Our hero comes around later.
The man of the hour, which is Newsman. I couldn't understand what you just said.
Newsman.
Mr. Newsman. That's right. In Italian fashion, Italian horror fashion, our hero is not a member of the law. He is a journalist who is from England, but is in America, working for an American newspaper. And his name is Peter West, a very American name. And he is played by Ian McCulloch, who is a British actor. A well-respected British actor. He's just in a ton of British movies and TV shows, and he was a real get for this movie. And so they become obviously our power couple in Zombie. But things don't stay in New York long. What happens?
They go to the Dominican Republic.
Now, what do you know about the Dominican Republic?
I don't know a lot about the Dominican Republic.
You like, know what it looks like.
But I know what it looks like, yeah.
And how do you know what it looks like? You have been there. You are now a bit closer to the movie Zombie 2 than I will ever be. You went to the Dominican Republic on a school trip.
Yeah, it was nice. It was fun.
Yeah.
Had some weird orphan tourism in it, but you know.
Yeah, not the greatest thing in the world, but that was not under your control.
No. And no. I did get yelled at by one of my friend's dads for being a bad influence.
You did get yelled at. I remember that.
And then I cried.
Yeah, but that was going to happen anyway.
I did nothing wrong. I did nothing wrong. Severe social anxiety and was shoved into and was made to entertain a bunch of children I'd never met and couldn't speak the language.
I thought you were going to say you were shoved into an orphanage.
I kind of was.
You kind of were. Yes, if you go on a, I know they don't do these as much anymore, but if you go on a tour in another country and they ask you to go on an orphanage tour, please don't do that. It is not good for the orphans.
No, it's also not good for the middle schoolers that you force to go do this.
It is uncomfortable for everybody. And nobody
comes
out.
Emotionally harrowing.
Fortunately, there's no orphans in this version of the Dominican Republic. There are only zombies. And, I mean, that's not that zombies are better than orphans. You know, help the orphans, please. It's a bad situation for them. So the reason they go here because that's where her father was. The island of Matul in the Caribbean. And so they go there.
The most sunburnt man.
Mm-hmm. Who do they meet?
The most sunburnt... Superman.
They meet a couple, like a couple.
They meet Superman.
And why do you call him Superman?
Because of his shirt.
Because he's wearing a shirt with Superman on it. I mean, the Superman S on it. Not a picture of Superman.
He's wearing a shirt with the Daily Planet on it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just rewatched The Goonies, and I was getting it confused with Sloth wearing a Superman shirt.
I was like, what are you talking about?
In my mind, I'm seeing him tearing his shirt open with the Superman S, and I'm like, yeah. And then I'm like, no, wait, that was in the Goonies, which I watched right after I watched this.
No, you made the joke, and I didn't understand the joke.
Mitzi, by the way, liked the Goonies so much that she demanded her mother watch it the very next day.
That's something we don't have in common. That guess movie who, gave me nightmares.
Guess who did not like the Goonies?
Her Alana.
Mother. Yeah. So they meet this couple, Brian, played by Al Cliver. And
that's a great name.
Would it surprise you to find that Al Cliver is an Italian actor whose real name is Pierluigi Conti?
That's also a great name.
He also went by, his first name is Pierluigi. He also went by Pierluigi Conti, so that's not much better. And also by Al Cleaver.
Also a great name. Just a whole list of great names.
Cliver may actually be pronounced Cleaver with like an Italian accent. I can't tell you. But he was married to a woman named Annie Brilland, a French singer. Annie Bell is what she went by. Singer and actress who appeared in many an erotic film. So good for you, Al Cliver, Pierluigi. But yes, he wears a shirt that says the Daily Planet on it. We don't know why. So that's Pierluigi. He's an Italian actor. He's been in a lot of Italian things. And his wife is with him, Susan Barrett, which is again a very like just like Brian Hull, Susan Barrett. They're Americans, even though they're not. And she is played by Oretta Gay.
Someone who doesn't know how to swim.
Oretta Gay, and tell us about her not knowing how to swim.
The one prerequisite. The one prerequisite for auditioning for this role was that you know how to swim.
Right.
And she's like, yeah, I definitely know how to swim. And they were like, great. So she goes to audition or do this scene and get in the water. And she immediately starts drowning because she doesn't know how to swim.
Yeah. They had to like shoot all of her swimming scenes with a devil. That made Lucio Fulci very angry. And as they say, he always shows one actor on set to be angry at and hate forever and treat like garbage. And it was Oretta Gay.
I don't blame him.
She did this movie. She did three more. She had three more roles. And then I guess she quit acting forever. And I don't blame her. Her last credit is archive footage, presumably from this movie, in the compilation video, The Hottest Zombie Movie Babes. So, Go Oretta Gay. I'm very happy for you. I wonder what
she's naked in a lot of her scenes in this movie.
She is naked in a lot of this movie. She, by the way, if you're wondering, of the 30, she placed number 24 in hottest zombie movie babe. So congratulations, Oretta Gay.
But her scene that has a lot of nudity in it does have the hero of the movie in it as well.
It does. Who is?
The shark.
So tell us about the shark.
The best shark, a real shark, that fights a zombie and wins.
It does win. How does this come about? How do we see a zombie fight a shark?
Well, she goes and she's like a photographer or something.
Or something.
Something. And she's like, I'm going to go down here and I'm going to get some pictures.
Yeah.
While being completely naked. And we're like, great. Okay.
She is completely naked. I mean, she's wearing like underpants, but they're like very sheer. And I'm like, and on one hand, I'm like, this is, you know, excessive. But on the other hand, I'm like, I guess if you're out and you're just why wouldn't she swim like this? Like the guy.
But she's with two strangers.
But she doesn't care, man. It's like, whatever. Like, what does she care?
I don't think you should go into the ocean naked. That's just my thing. I think it's irresponsible and dangerous.
She is wearing underpants and underpants. She's wearing underpants.
Just put on some clothes. It's not that hard.
In any case, she's down in the water and what does she see?
A shark.
And?
She freaks out for no reason because the shark does not care about her.
The shark certainly does not care about her.
So she's like, ah, help, shark. And then she goes back underwater. And then she sees a man who grabs her because he's a zombie.
There's a zombie underwater. And she just sort of yeets herself out of there.
But this shark, this is a real shark, right?
So the shark, the zombie and the shark. The zombie is played by Ramon Bravo. And Ramon Bravo was chosen to play this zombie because Ramon Bravo was a famous diver, photographer, and underwater filmmaker. And in fact, he was responsible for the movie Tiger Shark, which was a ripoff of Jaws.
Mm-hmm.
He owned movie sharks, or a movie shark. And so this shark you see in this movie, and it's very obvious when you watch it, is drugged and toothless. There's no teeth in this shark's mouth, which is quite obvious when the shark swims towards the camera and opens its mouth. And you're like, I thought those sharks had teeth. So no one was in danger of the shark in this scene. They're more in danger of drowning. But that's him playing the zombie. And the zombie fights the shark. And as you said up top, the zombie loses. But what does he lose?
An arm.
The shark bites off the zombie's arm. And I'm going to go right on top and say, it's a weird little sequence, but if I wasn't expecting it and I was like a person in the theater in the 1970s, I'd be like, hell yeah, haven't seen this before.
I like the shark.
Yes. This is the last we see of the shark. It does not come back into play. It's not a character.
No.
No.
It is the hero, though.
It is the hero of the film. I like to believe. Well, I guess. Well, we'll get to the ending in a bit. So meanwhile, there's this guy named Dr. David Menard.
And we've seen him before.
And where have we seen him before?
I can't remember.
Actor Richard Johnson.
Oh, he played the guy at in what was it called?
The Haunting.
The
Haunting. Very good. He played Dr. John Markway in The Haunting, which we watched quite a few movies ago.
Mm-hmm.
And this, he was the major get for Lucio Fulci. Fulci was so impressed by getting him in the first place, even though his career was kind of like in shambles at this point. He was a legit actor, and I'm going to go out and say that he single-handedly saves every scene he's in because his character is terrible. He could have just been a mad scientist or whatever. And instead, he's like, no, I'm going to act the hell out of this role. And he really does bring it.
He's so unlikable.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But, I mean, the first scene he's in, he like slaps his wife.
Right. So he has this wife who's played by Olga Carlatos. Who we have not seen in a movie, but who many of our audience has probably seen. I don't know if anyone listens to this show, but if they do, she played Prince's mom in Purple Rain. She played the mom in Purple Rain, Italian
actress. We definitely see her in this movie, though.
We see her in this movie, but you're saying that in a fun, funny way. And what do you mean by we see her in this movie?
We see all of her.
How much of her?
All of her.
How do we see all of her?
Shower scene.
But not only is she's showering in front of?
All the mirrors.
Three mirrors, which are strategically placed so that we see her in a complete 360. How much of her body do you want to see? You can pick and choose. Just look wherever on the screen. She's all over it. Yes, and she is an unhappy woman. She's got all kinds of issues, and her biggest...
I wouldn't say she has all kinds of issues. Well, I'd say she has one issue.
Which is?
And that's her husband.
What is her husband doing on this island? And this is the big mystery.
Doctoring?
He's a doctor. He's definitely a doctor. And he's got all these patients who are dying of the zombie plague.
Mm-hmm.
It's clear. I mean, if you know it's a zombie movie, there's all these people. He's trying to cure the zombie plague, according to him. But he might also have caused the zombie plague.
I thought that, like, he got wind of, like, a case and came to the island to try and cure it.
Something like that. But his presence...
He heard the legends of the island.
Yeah.
And was like, well, science probably caused something to happen here.
I guess he might be exacerbating the zombie plague. Like his presence on the island might be causing the native residents of the island to be causing more zombies to rise. Because not only do zombies reproduce in this movie by biting people, they also rise from the dead. Like they come up out of the ground, but only when drums are playing. You know, there's maybe some voodoo going on, or it might just be that the voodoo practitioners are doing their voodoo stuff in response to the zombies rising. We don't get an answer. Just don't think you're going to get any answers. So his wife wants to get off the island. He wants to stay and do his research. What ultimately happens to his wife, Paola?
She gets a broken wood jammed in her eye.
Does she just get it jammed in her eye, or is it? Is
no, there's... she's slowly pulled onto the.
Is it a long, laborious process?
I stopped watching the.
This is like the third time you turned your head away from the screen.
Mm-hmm.
She's attacked in the house when he's out. She's taking her long shower, and a zombie breaks in. There's a long scene where she's trying to keep it out of the room. She's shutting the door on its hand, so it smashes through the door, grabs her by the back of the head, starts pulling her towards the door. She's fighting and screaming, and there's a jagged piece of wood aimed right at her eye, and it pulls her eye onto the jagged piece of wood in close up. Like it shows everything. It is clearly fake. Obviously, this is not a realistic shot. Like, you can tell it's a fake dummy head. You can tell it's a fake eye. Still incredibly effective. The eye behaves as an eye would never behave. Our eyes are not carnival prizes. It's also been said that this is either a tribute to or a ripoff of or a bad version of the eye cutting scene in the movie Un Chien Andalou. I don't know how to say it. Where a woman gets her eyeball cut open, and it's just a fake. It's not a fake eyeball. It's like a cow's eye.
I've cut open a cow's eye.
Yeah, but eye trauma is bad, and we don't like it. We don't want to see it. So yeah, it was a very effective scene. It's like probably, I think, the most. It's between the shark fight and the eye pop that are like the two most famous scenes from this movie, and like kind of the ones that cemented it in like extreme horror history. So she comes to no good end. But eventually, our two couples and the doctor ultimately do come together. Their stories do collide because the doctor's friend dies of being bit by a zombie. And so he sort of like sitting vigil over the body waiting for Duran. So mm-hmm. he has all these, every time someone dies, he wraps them in a shroud and ties them up so they can just sit up and he can shoot them in the head. Mm-hmm. And this is slowly driving this guy crazy. You can tell, which is one of the reasons I have sort of sympathy for him, because even though he's a jerk, his work is driving him nuts. And so he finds the group who are like, they're zombies.
They shoot off a flare because their boat gets smacked.
Right. And they go to his house for some reason.
They go to the hospital and he's like, go check on my wife. And they're like, okay. And they're driving and they get to the place and it's overrun with zombies.
And she is being eaten. So not only do we see her undignified death by a wooden splinter, but we also get to see her corpse torn apart. And just being snacked on by zombies. Another thing about this movie is this is one of the first movies that showed zombies as completely decayed corpses. These weren't the freshly dead. These were like just rotted hulks. They used this clay makeup like that makes them almost look like pottery. They're so stiff at times, which doesn't look like a corpse, but it is effective. They are very monstrous and unhuman. There's a lot of jagged teeth. Famously, there is a zombie with worms coming out of its eyes, something you did not care for. This movie has been described as the first movie where the zombies are something you can smell through the screen. Like, you know, this movie looks like it smells terrible the whole time. And I bet
it did.
It did smell terrible. Hearing about the hell that the actors had to go through to have that makeup caked on and just sitting in it all day.
When was this movie filmed?
Probably like 78.
No, I mean, like, what month?
Oh, I don't know. I have no idea.
Because there's a big difference between the Dominican Republic in the summer and the Dominican Republic in the winter. Wow.
Production occurred during June and July.
Yeah, so...
Oh, but it was mostly filmed in Italy, in Latina Italy. They did film on Santo Domingo a little bit, but a lot of the filming was... Okay. Set in Italy. Not that Italy doesn't get hot in the summer. I'll say that right now. Italy gets pretty hot.
I went to the Dominican Republic in the winter, in Minnesota winter. It was like February or something.
Yeah.
And it was the perfect temperature pretty much the entire time we were there. It got a bit hot for a while, but I never felt the need to like do anything.
Complain about it?
Yeah. And I want to say that everyone who was in the Dominican Republic, except for me, looked like our Daily Planet man when we got back.
Like, how do you mean?
Like, super badly burnt. Every single person. Except for me.
Except for you. How come?
Because I don't burn.
Because you don't burn. You just get even. Yes, right now in Latina, Italy, it is in the it is 88 degrees. It looks like it's in the upper 80s in the for the rest of the week. So in June, where they filmed, it's not cool. And you're right on the ocean, so you are. It's probably a little humid, maybe. I don't know. I don't know anything about Italy, but it's warm, and they're in caked on makeup. So
does that mean that guy was actually that badly burnt the entire time they were recording?
Probably.
That's the worst.
He was probably not feeling well.
I don't think our audience understands just how badly burnt this man was.
Just so you know, right now in Santo Domingo in the Dominican Republic, it is only 80 degrees.
Oh.
With thunderstorms, but it is in the mid 80s all week and probably very humid. So in case our audience was wondering what the weather was like in the Dominican Republic today, the day that we are recording this episode.
I just can't get over how burnt that man was.
And why is he wearing a Daily Planet t-shirt? We'll never know.
Yeah, how was that allowed?
So they find her corpse. She's being eaten. They fight off some zombies. They get in their Jeep and run off.
They get into the slowest car wreck ever.
And what happened as a result of this car wreck?
I don't know. Apparently the guy's leg explodes or something. Like
yeah. So our hero, Peter West, suffers from an... So they crash the Jeep. It's not a bad crash, but it hurts. It's the slowest crash. It hurts his ankle somehow. And... So they're like, all right. So they get out of the Jeep and they're going through the jungle. And it's very slow progress because not only did he hurt his ankle. Yeah, like you said, his ankle must have shattered into a million pieces. Like, I have twisted my ankle pretty bad. And I could probably still run away from zombies if I had to.
I can't walk for extended periods of time without my ankle wanting to explode.
Mm-hmm.
And I still think I could probably, like... book it from a horde of flesh-eating zombies.
Yeah. So they're stumbling through the jungle, and they come across a graveyard filled with conquistadores. Do you know what a conquistador is?
It's one of the people who, like, invaded.
Yeah, big invaders. Do you know what a cornquistador is? Do you know what a cornquistador is?
No, what is it?
The cornquistador was the mascot for a snack food when I was a kid.
I thought you were going to make a dad joke and I was...
Called cornquistos. And cornquistos basically became what we know of as combos now. They're like crackers or pretzels that are like tubes and they have cheese down the middle. And these were corn chips, but they're tubes with cheese down the middle. And a woman would be eating them and... Then a conquistador would show up and she would go, a conquistador. And he'd be all cornquistador. And he would like take her cornquistos or he'd give her cornquistos. I don't know. But I just want to point out that there was a snack food in the 80s whose entire gimmick rested on people knowing what a conquistador was. And I don't think many people did. I only did it because we had studied them in elementary school. We just knew that conquistadors were a thing. And so I was like, oh, that's a conquistador. What a weird mascot for your... Someone was like, what are we going to call our corn snack? And they were like, conquistos, like conquistador. And they were like, great, just print it. It's a corn snack with cheese in the middle. So yes, they find a conquistador graveyard.
This is the most infuriating part of the entire movie for me.
We hear voodoo drums going on in the background. And what happened?
The boys start rising from the dead. I went on a whole rant after this movie about this.
What happens?
Well, they start rising from the dead. And, like, you know, they're hundreds of years old at this point. And what do they look like when they rise from the dead? Fleshmen. They look like fleshmen.
Fleshmen made out of... They look like golems, basically. Like, because they have that clay makeup all over them. And worms in their eyes.
They don't look like they've been dead for hundreds of years.
We get to that problem of, like... I'm sorry, but worms and maggots do not exist in corpses that are hundreds of years old. There's nothing left. There's no reason they would be there. They would. The worms would be like tilling the soil with their butts, and maggots would have no interest in a 300-year-old corpse. I guess maybe they're supposed to be like mummified, but even that doesn't make any sense because it's a tropical island. They wouldn't be mummified. They'd be mulch. All that aside, I thought what infuriated you is the fact that nobody runs away from these incredibly
slow zombies.
That's
also really infuriating. The fact that, why are you sitting in a graveyard? Why are you sitting in general? You're being chased by a horde of zombies.
This is where the This is where the lovely Susan Barrett, played by Aretha Gay, is horribly killed by a zombie. She gets her neck bitten out, and the zombie is in front of her for about 7 hours, mm-hmm. coming towards her as she stands completely still, going, oh, oh.
That happens a lot in this movie.
A lot in this movie. That is, to me, the only real example of lazy filmmaking in this film, mm-hmm. is the director just being like, just stand there and be afraid for about 5 minutes while the zombie comes to you. Figure out a way to stage it.
That's my problem with zombies, especially, like, not like, what is that movie called? Zombie War? War Zombies? War of Zombies?
World War Z?
Yeah. Because they have speedy zombies.
There's fast zombies. Yeah. In the Dawn of the Dead remake, those are fast zombies.
Mm-hmm. The problem I have with slow zombies is it's like, well, what are they going
to
do?
Well, that's the thing. To me, slow zombies are frightening because they never stop. And it's danger. And it's in numbers. And the danger is also in complacency. Like, they're so slow and unassuming that you let down your guard and then one's just behind you. It doesn't work, though, when they are incredibly slow and you're just slow for no reason. Like, I think Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead do a good job of like, oh, you can just run around them. But then where are you going to go? They're going to keep coming after you. So you board yourself up and then you're really screwed. These people just stand and wait for them to bite them, especially Aretha Gay. She gets her neck bit out and it's bad news. So they go to the hospital. They make their way back to the hospital. And this is our big like siege scene, because there's zombies attacking the hospital from outside. There's zombies rising inside the hospital. And, there's also a woman who works at the hospital who doesn't even get a name. She's like his nurse or his assistant, and she gets horribly killed, even though like I liked her as a character. I thought she was
like the only person who until her death didn't do anything super stupid.
Exactly. I guess her name was, she was Nurse Clara, his assistant, played by Stefania DiMario, who
she was very pretty.
I was not going to say that. That was like, I was like, I'm not going to mention the fact that she was very pretty because that would be weird coming out of my mouth. It's not weird coming out of your mouth. So I'm simply going to agree with you.
Why is it not weird coming out of my mouth, but weird coming out of yours?
Because it seems less exploitative coming out of your mouth. A very pretty woman, Stefania DiMario. Mm-hmm. She doesn't have a whole lot of credits to her name. She is underused in this movie. I feel like I wanted to see her do more. Her last movie was in 1984, Caligula's Slaves, as Roman Lady. So that's it. She also worked in the art department on The English Patient and the costume and wardrobe department in Erotic Games. So... I mean, you know, Italian filmmaking. In any case, she gets killed. The doctor gets killed.
The doctor's other friend gets killed.
Yep. He has a lot of friends who just keep showing up and dying. The woman, Aretha Gay, shows back up. And
I will say, we never see the gardener die.
We don't see the gardener die. You're right.
He just leaves. He's like, all right, see you later.
Yeah. Goodbye.
With his dog.
He does leave with his dog. So the building gets set on fire. Aretha Gay comes
building,
back.
The building doesn't get set on fire. Let's be real clear about what happens to this building.
Please be clear on what happens to this building.
They start chucking Molotov cocktails in the building.
So they have a Molotov cocktail fight that is basically like the rock throwing scene from It. Mm-hmm. Because there's an endless supply of Molotov cocktails and they're just like flying all over the place. And
now you don't have zombies chasing after you. You have flaming zombies chasing after
you're
you.
You're inside a building being besieged by zombies. And you
it's
decide,
made entirely of wood, by the way.
You decide to throw Molotov cocktails inside the building. And they block their own way with fire. And then they turn around and they didn't even think to look behind them because they're zombies. So Brian Hull, Al Cliver, gets bitten by his wife. Mm-hmm. And
because he just stands there and stares at her.
Right. And our hero and our heroine, Peter West and Anne Bowles, escape on a boat. But they bring Brian with them, even though he has been bitten.
Because mm-hmm. They need evidence so that this happened. Yes.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, because they're going to take the dead man back to the mainland. And they get in this little boat and somehow take this little boat from the Dominican Republic all the way up to New York.
And it's not just a little boat. It's a little damaged boat.
It's a little damaged. That's right. That barely works, which is why they were stopped in the first place. From the Dominican Republic to the New York by sea is 2,470 kilometers by sea. So they took mm-hmm. a broken motorboat, 2,470 kilometers or 1,534 miles up to New York Harbor. Why all the way to New York? No idea. They could have just gone to Florida. They just could have gone to somewhere else in the Dominican Republic and been like, look at this dead guy. But nope, all the way back to New York, but they have their body, they have their evidence, they got to prove to the world that zombies are on their way. And what do they find when they get to New York?
Zombies are there.
New York has already been completely overrun by zombies because, don't forget, in the beginning of the movie, the zombie fell into the ocean and presumably either bit someone.
No, the zombie did bite someone. The zombie bit the police officer.
Oh, that's right. Zombie bit the police officer.
Which I still don't understand how a zombie apocalypse could even happen in the United States because we have so many guns. And you're trying to tell me that someone in New York wouldn't see a person running at them with blood all over their mouth and be like, oh, guess I gotta get a gun out and shoot them.
As they say in World War Z, not the movie, in the book, as they say in World War Z, where zombies are slow, you think they're easy to kill, but they can only be killed by a shot to the brain. And people who are trained in guns are not trained to shoot people in the head. They are trained to shoot people in the chest. Shooting someone in the head is actually extremely difficult. So...
that's... not when the zombie's moving half a mile per year.
You just walk right up to it and pop one in the head. Yeah, but that's the terror of the zombie movie, is the fact that we don't assume they're going to be dangerous. They are. They create a thing. So presumably, if this is Dawn of the Dead 2, if it's supposed to be Dawn of the Dead 2, it's actually a secret prequel. It's kind of the mm-hmm. it's kind of what they're doing. This is how the zombie plague started. But again, it's not actually a sequel to Dawn of the Dead. It's just zombie. It's Zombie 2. And that's how it ends. It ends on a bleak note, which I actually kind of like. I kind of like the fact that it's like, they thought they were safe, but they actually, the world is already overrun with zombies.
You do want to be on the ocean if there is a zombie apocalypse, though.
Unless you're in a Brian Keene zombie apocalypse, in which case you are SOL anyway, because in the Brian Keene universe, he's a novelist, he's wrote a bunch of zombie novels that are all tied together. One of his variants on the zombie plague is contractible to any animal in the world. So people do flee to an abandoned oil rig in that, and the animals are slowly becoming infected. First the birds and then the fish.
Are they still going after humans?
They're going after anything that moves. Okay. So yeah, it's a nightmare world. It's one of those like, just shoot me kind of scenarios. Like,
again, nope. I think we've established on this podcast, if me or you were put in any survival situation ever, we would just shoot ourselves.
Just shoot ourselves. I'd shoot you first and then I'd shoot myself. So just because I love you very much. So a few things. Cinematography was done by Sergio Salvati, and I would say that especially in the restored 4K edition of this movie actually looks really good. Mm-hmm. There's some beautiful shots. It's probably the best, I believe they say it's the best that any of Fulci's movies ever looked. There's a lot of care given to the cinematography in this movie. The music is by Fabio Frizzi, who did quite a few movies up through Puppet Master the Littlest Reich in 2018. A lot of Italian horror, including Devilfish, the movie Lamberto Bava's Devilfish, which was actually featured on a Mystery Science Theater episode, a very funny Mystery Science Theater episode. He did Fulci's movies. He did this movie. He did Contraband, City Living Dead, The Beyond, Manhattan Baby. And the 4K Blu-ray comes with a CD of the soundtrack, which I didn't know until I looked at the booklet. I was like, oh, this comes with a big, thick booklet. I took the booklet out, and underneath it was the CD. I was like, hot dang.
It's no Goblin soundtrack, though.
It's no Goblin soundtrack, but it is a decent soundtrack, and it's actually worth a listen. He based it on... He based one of the cues on the Beatles' A Day in the Life. The eye gouging scene is based on the music of Beatles' A Day in the Life, which I find very funny. This movie was released, it was classified a video nasty by the British Film Board, so it was illegal in England for years and years and years. Released on home video quite a bit, but terribly chopped up in all the countries chopped it up because it is so vile, so violent. It got mixed reviews, kind of bad reviews, but it was actually really, really successful. This was a super successful mm-hmm. movie in theaters and on video, which led, of course, to Zombie 3, Zombie 4, and the whole weird zombie series we talked about up top. But there's one gentleman who absolutely loves this movie. Do you know his name?
Is it our boy?
Our boy
Guillermo del Toro.
Guillermo del Toro.
I can see why he likes this movie.
Why do you think he likes this movie?
I mean, look at everything that happens in it. Like, he's all about practical effects
mm-hmm.
and things like that. And we've talked, there's no hand gore in this movie. We used to talk about Del Toro-isms. We don't do that anymore.
We don't. We kind of fell away from that a few years ago.
But like the eye scene and like the rising from the dead, like mm-hmm. the hands from the grave. And there is actually hand gore in this movie. I forgot. One of the zombies gets their finger like crushed off.
They do get crushed hand. That's right. You did love that.
Yeah, that was great. I can definitely see why he likes this movie. It's very like stylized.
It is.
And it has good practical effects and things like that. There's a shark scene.
So Guillermo del Toro loves this movie so much that he did a minute and a half long Trailers from Hell video on it. You can check that out on YouTube. But on the 4K release, there is a whole 10-minute feature called Zombie Lover. And it is just Guillermo del Toro talking about this movie for 10 minutes. And there's like clips from the movie. But he talks about specifically just like his history with this movie. And it's one of his favorite films of all times, he says. He saw it in a giant movie palace in Mexico, mm-hmm. a movie palace from the golden age of cinema. Nobody was in the audience. Hardly anybody was there. He says mind exploded. When he saw it, it made such an impact on him that he did not know if he had dreamed it after he saw it. He said he described this movie as almost arrogant in its declaration of existence. Like,
damn,
the movie is arrogant simply by existing. He's like, at the time there was no VHS tapes. You couldn't rent movies, so you were at the mercy of whoever was bringing movies to your hometown. Mm-hmm. And like
in Spirit of the Beehive.
Yeah. So none of his friends believed him when he told them about this movie, because it was so extreme. That happened with this movie and another movie we'll be talking about in just a little bit. But he says that the first three to five minutes are perfection. He mentions the Dracula connection. He loves that there was a fat zombie in it, because it was like the sign of like the first zombie that looked like it just couldn't get enough meat. He says that the screenwriter was brilliant in their choice to make this a cyclical story where, you know, the beginning and the ending connect, that it's a riff on all zombie movies by showing like biological and like voodoo zombies together. Mm-hmm. He loves the image of the zombies coming out of their cocoons, out of their shrouds. He loves that this movie is made of things that smell and fluids and earth and mud. He says it's a sensorially supercharged film. He calls out the zombie shark, the shark scene. He loves it so much. He loves the splinter through the eye scene. He says it's one of the best examples of montage in horror film. It's sheer cinema that you know it's going to happen. It's so prolonged that you have enough time to accept it. And he says that the final moment of the zombies on the bridge going to New York, he can't imagine how they did it with no permits. That he's like, he just envisions Italians showing up in a van filled with zombies, parking on this bridge, setting up their cameras, getting everyone out in their zombie makeup and like filming it and then just like hightailing it out of there.
That I forgot about that part where we see all like the zombies and like assuming we're seeing like people trying to get out of the city, but it's just normal everyday traffic.
It's normal New York traffic, but you see all these zombies and you're like, it's supposed to be the end of the world, but it is kind of ruined a little bit by just normal traffic.
Yeah.
There's no car horns or anything. He says it's so brilliant. It shows Fulci's instincts. He says that when Fulci's instincts can be articulated on screen, they're so misanthropic, so deranged and cruel beyond good taste and even beyond exploitation. He says they reveal the type of filmmaker that he favors and that he's most addicted to, the guy that gets high on his own supply. He says the best moments in Fulci's films are compulsive, that he was always talking about moving on and making better and grander movies. He never did because he died so young, but he was truly a ferocious mind, and that this is his most savage movie, that he never made a movie more savage than this one. Yes, because Fulci died in 1996. His daughter became kind of like carrying on his legend. Like if you read a book about Fulci, there's always an introduction by his daughter, I believe, either, I don't know if remember if it's Camilla or Antonella, one of his daughters. But yeah, he died at the age of 68. I mean, I guess he wasn't young.
Oh, man.
What?
He died at the age of 68.
He almost made it to the nice age. But yeah, Fulci went on to make, this isn't his most celebrated movie, because after this, he made his trilogy, what is called his like, I can't remember, End of the World trilogy or something, City of the Living Dead, The Beyond, and House by the Cemetery.
Is City of the Living Dead one of the many sequels in the Living Dead train of
films?
Yeah.
It is not. It's its own thing.
Originally,
it was supposed to be based on the works of Lovecraft, and some say it still kind of is, but it's really a zombie movie.
I mean, you could say anything's based on the works of Lovecraft, and it's probably true.
That's true. But yeah, he made a bunch of movies after this, including Zombie 3. You know, which isn't supposed to be that great, but he did make it. And Guillermo del Toro loves it. I'm going to say if you want to get a copy of Zombie, get it on the 4K restoration 3-disc Blu-ray set. There's also a super high-def version, which my player can't even handle. It comes with 2 discs, one with the movie and a bunch of commentary tracks, and one with a bunch of special features, like interviews and behind-the-scenes footage. Comes with a booklet that is practically a book, and also the CD of the soundtrack that I didn't know existed. So, yeah. Now, Willow, I mentioned that there were 2 movies that Guillermo del Toro saw in the theaters that when he told his friends about, they did not believe that such a movie existed. One was Zombie. And then now the other one is our movie for our next episode. Can you imagine what that movie might be?
Is it Alien?
It's Alien.
Yes!
A movie that I have seen so many times that I don't even know if I need to watch it again.
I love this movie so much.
You've seen Alien.
I have a book about the making of Alien.
How many times have you seen Alien?
Many times. I love the universe. I love xenomorphs. I've played the game Alien Isolation like 6 times. It was the first video game I ever actually completed.
Yeah. Yeah, you're a big Alien fan.
I have bought
a bunch of Alien stuff over the years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have an Alien sitting on my lamp right now. It's the big plushy Alien baby that I have.
So our next episode will not only be Alien. I think it'll be a celebration of all things Alien. Let's just say that. We're not just going to talk about... I feel like Alien has been done to death. I feel like everyone has just talked about the movie. Mm-hmm. I just want to talk about the whole concept of Alien.
I love xenomorphs so much. I was actually just talking about xenomorphs with my mom because we both had conflicting... Okay, anyway, I can talk about this after.
We'll talk about it next time when we talk about 1979's Alien, directed by Ridley Scott.
This movie stars one of my biggest celebrity crushes as well.
Which one? Tom Skerritt?
No, Sigourney Weaver.
Veronica Cartwright?
I'm sorry. I wasn't aware that you didn't know I was gay.
Look, Tom Skerritt transcends...
You know what? That's fair.
Sexuality and sexual attraction.
So does Sigourney Weaver, though. Okay?
That is also very true. But I'm going to admit that when I was a kid, I crushed hard on Veronica Cartwright. So she was so sad and she cried so much in the movie that I just wanted to give her a big hug.
I'm a big Sigourney Weaver fan.
We will be back next time with The World of Alien. And until then, I'm Phil.
And I'm Willow.
And we'll see you when
it's Del Toro time.